A new era and a new season kicked off on Thursday night as Kyle Lowry played in his first regular season game as a member of the Miami Heat, and it was a great start, a 137-95 blowout. Stay here for a recap of everything you need to know from that game coming up next.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, the longest-running podcast covering your Miami Heat. Thanks for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. And remember that every episode is always free and available wherever you listen to podcasts. So make sure you subscribe and follow to get the best coverage available. This episode of Locked On Heat is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. The Miami Heat kicked off the 2021-22 season on Thursday night, hosting the Milwaukee Bucks, the reigning NBA champs at home. An opportunity maybe to exact a little revenge after the Bucks swept the Heat out of the playoffs. The Bucks were shorthanded. They were missing starters Drew Holiday and Brook Lopez, as well as reserves like great value Kevin Garnett, aka Bobby Portis, and Rodney Hood. In the past, that might have been a cause for concern because we've seen Heat teams losing games that were absolutely winnable. You'd see a random scrub Heat killer step up. We saw this version of this team lost a couple seasons ago to a depleted Washington Wizards group with Garrison Matthews at the helm. I'm not sure how many of you remember that. You probably tried your best to forget it. This seemed like a ripe opportunity for Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and everybody else in that starting lineup to maybe defend their championship against the Heat, but that wasn't a problem on Thursday. The Heat took advantage of the depleted Bucks team and blew them out by 32 points, a lead that Miami held the whole game once it had ballooned actually to 42 points. The final score, 137-95. The first quarter was the tone setter right away. When I saw the Bucks starting lineup, head coach Mike Budenholzer went really small, started Giannis at center in place of Brook Lopez. They were surrounded by Middleton along with Pat Connaughton, Grayson Allen, and George Hill. Well, Middleton and Connaughton are kind of tweeners, more wing players than anything else. None of them really a four by any stretch, something you could probably get away with because P.J. Tucker playing the four for Miami, starting at the four for Miami, somewhat undersized himself. But Miami had a pretty clear size lineup with Duncan Robinson at 6'7", Jimmy Butler at 6'7", and the Heat were absolutely able to take advantage of that smaller lineup from the Bucks. Particularly Bam Adebayo on Giannis. I thought that was the matchup that was really going to define the game, and it absolutely did. And the first quarter, again, on defense, this Heat team, we've talked about it all preseason. We knew what kind of a team this was going to be, built on the precepts of defense. Everybody said this was going to be historically good defense, and that absolutely looked the case in that first quarter. They held the Bucks at just 17 points, and they scored 40 of their own, including a Tyler Hero buzzer beater from about 30 feet away from the rim. The Bucks were actually able to cut the lead down to about 15 in the second quarter. It was almost an inverse of what we had seen in the first. Giannis kind of took over the game, started getting a little bit more engaged. Kyle Lowry rolled his ankle and was out of the lineup for a little bit. And I think in between, when some other backups got in there, maybe there was a little bit of foul trouble as well. Milwaukee was able to start clawing their way back. But the Heat, again, something they have not historically been able to do, matched that energy and took control of the game. They were able to build that lead back up before the end of the second half. Second quarter, and they continued from there. Like, they just kept adding to that win, the lead total, and they just kept their foot on the gas. It would not let Milwaukee get comfortable or get into any kind of rhythms. You had a couple shots here from George Hill, a couple shots from Middleton. None of it mattered. Miami answered every challenge, held their own, and continued to build that lead. And again, this is the largest lead in franchise history. This is not something that this team has done throughout the past few years. So it's a new era, and Thursday's win was absolutely evidence of that. Let's start with Kyle Lowry. That is, as always, the big story. His first regular season game as a member of the Miami Heat. Was it his best outing? I'm not concerned just yet. I think a lot of people will start to point to his statistical outline and maybe they'll say, you know what, they'll kind of overlook it because it was a big win. But at the same time, some concerns are already going to set in. I'm not there yet. He played 24 minutes, went 1 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 6 from 3-point range, only shot 2 free throws, hit both of them, finished with 5 points. Not great, right? It's not that those shots were bad shots. In fact, a lot of them were in rhythm. I think I might have had 1-4 shot there that I recall. By and large, though, good shots, wide open, part of the offense. I don't have a problem with those necessarily. I assume those will start to fall on occasion. I saw some Raptors fans tweeting that this was kind of par for the course when it comes to Lowry, something he's done over the course of the last few years in Toronto, because it didn't really matter. Again, the rest of his team engaged. He was making plays for everybody else, and he was very, very active in trying to get everybody in their spots. Tyler Hero, not as a dig to Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic or anybody else that he's played with, pointed out that this is the first time he's had a point guard that he's played with a point guard like Cal, and I'll keep saying Cal, because he's able to set everybody up, get them in their right spots, make sure that the offense is flowing in a particular way. And it was absolutely noticeable. Lowry's impact, even when he's not scoring the ball as prolifically as he can, just seemed like he was a cog of a smooth running machine. It was a game of beauty. Incredible offense in that first quarter. I haven't seen anything like that maybe since parts of their title run, or not title run, their finals run a couple of years ago in the Orlando bubble. There were games in those playoffs where they were just so fluid, so amazing, and they were able to kind of capitalize on some really, really good defense and build on some great offense. But aside from that, this is, we haven't seen as electric an offense as this in quite some time, and it was absolutely evident. Again, several offensive records were set for season opener, most points scored, largest margin of victory, most assists in a game, on and on. There was a couple others there that I'm forgetting, but overall, just a fantastic game. Lowry also had a tremendous impact on defense. Not only did he have 6 assists on offense, but on defense, he also took a charge. He also had a steal and a block as well. And partly something that won't pop up in the stat line, he was just a quiet game changer to me. Not only were there the right rotations, not only did he take, just recognize that even if there was a big down low, even if an MVP level player like Giannis Antetokounmpo, Lowry could switch on him, handled it easily. If you had seen that last year with Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic, you know it was going to be an easy 2 points, maybe even an and one situation. Shout out John Crotty. Instead, this was a fantastic opportunity for Lowry to hold his ground, get his elbow or hand in there, disrupt a shot, maybe force a turnover, maybe even hold his own just enough for a guy like Bam or PJ Tucker to switch over, provide the double team, and force Giannis into a turnover where he had to make a pass. At one point, it's exactly what happened. They created a double on Giannis. He had to kind of throw the ball, and he wound up going way over Grayson Allen's head out of bounds. It was a fantastic moment there where you can just really see what a game changer Lowry is. And it really helped everybody else too. It allowed guys like Jimmy and Bam, and Jimmy in particular, I had always thought that was going to be the case with Bam Adebayo, that he was going to be able to roam a little bit, but he was more of a one-on-one situation where he's trying to limit Giannis as much as possible. But when Lowry was at the point of attack on defense, he is so effective in that role that everybody else can kind of just freelance a little bit and just sort of figure out exactly where the ball is being swung to next. You could take a gamble. We saw Jimmy take several gambling opportunities, a lot of which forced turnovers, either leading to deflections or even an outright steal. Fantastic. Everybody was rotating. Everybody was just a step ahead, and Milwaukee had no response because they knew that, look, they were basically going to go through Giannis, and Miami responded every opportunity, focusing on limiting him, making sure that he was uncomfortable. Again, 4 of 11 shooting from the field, 15 total points. Not a great night for Giannis. I saw him shooting pregame, and I thought, look, he's putting up a much smoother free throw. He's shooting smoothly from 3-point range. None of that was evident against Miami. It was just a fantastic all-around game. He did go 1 of 3 from 3-point range. Giannis did, but it didn't really matter. By that point, it was just kind of, it was almost like perfunctory because Miami had such a big lead early on. I'll talk a little bit more about Bam Adebayo in this segment before getting into some of the other key moments and players of the game. But boy, Bam looked good. That is the version of Bam that we have been wanting to see very, very consistently over the last year. We saw moments, right? We saw stretches there where Bam was as electric as he could be and just smooth, comfortable, confident. That has been the key for Adebayo for years now. I remember talking to Chris Bosch about this years ago. And Chris told me, Bam has all the tools in the world. All he needs to do is be more confident. That's what we saw tonight. I don't know if it was the experience with USA basketball. I asked him about that on media day. I remember specifically, he could just tell that he was kind of just comfortable now because he has played alongside the best players in the world, not just for the United States, but for other countries as well. And he held his own. He played his role to perfection, and he knew he had to be aggressive on offense on Thursday night. And that's exactly what he was. He outplayed Adetokounmpo by a wide margin, 9 of 13 from the floor, a 2 of 5 for the free throw range, the only blemish there, but 20 points overall, 13 rebounds, unassist, didn't matter, didn't need to make plays. The ball was in his hands. When you dished it to him, it was him putting his head down and either forcing a turnover or forcing a foul on somebody or getting and capitalizing on any shot he wanted, basically a hook shot in the lane, a layup, the Euro step from 6'9", 200 and whatever pound Bam Adebayo on a thing of beauty, just power and grace rolled into one. I saw somebody tweet out that it was Bosch-like. Not sure if that's exactly quite there yet, but it wasn't as far off as it was a couple of years ago. And the all-around game is certainly there for Adebayo. It's a thing of beauty. And I think it's going to be a much more consistent thing that we see over the course of the season, because there's no reason why he had to be more aggressive today. Not when Jimmy's playing as well as he did. Jimmy had 21 points of his own, but Bam going as aggressively as he was, trying to force Adetokounmpo into foul trouble as well. Certainly a great strategy, and it worked. And just the jumper. There was one time where Kyle drove to the right of the painted area and then just found a wide open Bam Adebayo kind of at the free throw line. He took a smooth jumper, and I tweeted this out, but it was just, he shot it and he started backpedaling. Like, that's Steph Curry stuff right there. That's Klay Thompson stuff. That's like, you know, it's going in. I'm not even sticking around to watch it. I don't need to. I know it's butter. That's unbelievable to see Bam Adebayo have that kind of confidence. It was just a fantastic night. What else can I say? It was just a great overall game for the Heat, a huge blowout, a huge statement. Yes, I'll talk about later on how Milwaukee's depleted roster takes some of the bloom off the rose, but yeah, the hell with that. Right now, let's focus on some positives. I'll talk a little bit about the reserves and Jimmy Butler in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that this episode of Locked On Heat is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and families can come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for study group knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of French fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, the home team or the away team can come to recharge. It's a place you can always look forward to stopping at on a long road trip to rest your legs and refuel or to celebrate a big Heat win. You know, after any kind of little league game, you stop off at McDonald's or when you're on a road trip. I'll always remember going to, you know, long road trips and always seeing that McDonald's there waiting for you. You knew what you were going to get. It was always going to be dependable and great and a good family atmosphere as well. So I know I don't really have to sell McDonald's because it's been doing a pretty good job for 50 something years, but at the same time, it's always a great investment to just stop by at McDonald's and enjoy yourself there. So head over to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. Did somebody say Locked On Heat watch party? I'm loving it. So what can you say about Jimmy Butler? Just as good as Bam was, Jimmy had moments throughout the game where he was the Jimmy Butler of old. You forget all that talk about Bryn Forbes outscoring him, him looking hurt, kind of recovering. This was Jimmy in year one, I think. This was Jimmy in year one in Miami and possibly even versions of him that we saw in the Orlando playoffs. 9 of 11 at the free throw line. When he had the best free throw rate in the NBA a couple of seasons ago, this was reminiscent of that. 6 of 10 from the floor. The jumper was gone. The turnaround, the getting to the rim, no matter who they put on him, whether it was George Hill or Grayson Allen or Chris Middleton or Pat Connaughton, none of those guys were stopping him. Justin Nwora, just nobody could really stop him. It was ridiculous. They were all trying to get a hand there. Jimmy, a combination of speed and power. He looks healthy. he looks healthy. That's my takeaway from this, is there were moments there. He had a spin move that just put Nwora, couldn't even put him in a blender, just had him lost it completely. I mean, I had never seen something from Jimmy Butler like that before. He was so smooth. And yes, again, still had enough power to dominate a guy like Allen, who can't compete with him physically, and just able to get to his spots, either get the and one, create the foul, or get an easy layup. And in combination with the speed, the quickness, and the intent, shout out to Eric Spoelstra, I think it was a reinvigorated and very fun version of Jimmy Butler to see when he's getting to the line and still having an overall impact of the game. Again, there were some gambles there. There were a couple of missed shots that it seemed like he should have had. Way too many missed, or no, I'm sorry, passed up opportunities at the rim. I will say that Jimmy is in postseason form when it comes to choosing not to take a wide open layup and looking for a shooter out of the perimeter. And that's just who he is. That's who Bam is. Kyle did the same thing. Cal did the same thing. We're going to see that from him. You have to kind of just have a paradigm shift, Heat Nation, because it's not going away. I don't know exactly what it is. We've talked about it before. It's just, that's the nature of his game. He's trying to get everybody going. He can't help himself when it comes to passing up those opportunities. Tonight, it didn't matter. On another game down the road, maybe it'll be a difference maker. But for now, I understand the intention was for him to help and get everybody going. And it certainly worked. And partly, you know, Jimmy, because of Cal's injury, I got to keep reminding myself of that. Because of Cal's injury, he had to play some more minutes there probably in that staggered rotation in the second quarter that he might not have. It worked out because he wound up having, I think, his most impactful minutes there when Lowry was out. At the same time, he was also trying to get guys like Tyler Hero and Max Strus and Dwayne Dedman going. That was certainly a big part of his game. And it worked. It worked. Look, to Tyler Hero, moving on from Jimmy Butler, who was sensational and just doing everything well, I think Hero is poised for a huge breakout. I can't wrap my mind around it. 27 points and effortlessly so. I didn't even know he was at this kind of high mark in his point scoring until I looked at the recap afterwards and said, huh, that's a stat line, 27 points. It was just so not even unnoticeable, but it was just like he had the ball, he would shoot, and it was just easy. I kept focusing on the negative when I was watching him play. There was those wide open floaters and he seemed to kind of miss time. He short armed a little bit, didn't quite get to the rim on a couple of occasions or just left it short there, but it didn't matter. He was still 10 of 18. I mean, that's what, 60% from the field. That's pretty damn good. You have those kind of numbers and to go along with 27 points. He also made plays for other. He had some sensational passes. His rebounding has always been great, but he finished 27, 6 and 5. That's superstar stat line. That's a superstar stat line. I don't care that it's coming off the bench. I don't care if it's coming off against Thanasis Antetokounmpo instead of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Those are NBA players. That's an NBA team, G League or not, whatever you want to call it, whatever excuse you want to say. And Tyler Hero had 27 friggin' points on 10 of 18 shooting. Sensational night for Tyler. And I think he's going to be a fantastic player. Look, he's going to have his off game. He's 21 years old. It's bound to happen. But we all talked about him putting on muscle, the ability to absorb contact. Certainly evident today. 3-point line, but also 3 of 4 from the free throw line. I don't know what his career high is for free throw attempts, but it's probably not much more than that. Just, we're going to see more of him getting the line. We need to see that kind of uptick from him if he's going to be following in Kyle Lowry's footsteps, especially when Lowry comes out of the game. It's going to be really, really interesting to see Hero continue to put up these kind of numbers throughout the season, because I think he's poised. I think he's ready. We talked about it. We saw it all preseason. This is a confidence boost for him. Another opportunity to say, you know what? I can do this. I could do it in preseason. We all knew he wasn't lacking in confidence. And as Pat Riley said, now is your time to actually not just say it, but to go out and do it. Brother, he did it on Thursday night. Fantastic game for Tyler. And I got to say, for all my criticism of Dwayne Dedman, his 15 minutes were impactful. Finished with a plus 13 on the floor during that stretch. 13 points for him, 5 of 6 for the field. Also shot a couple of free throws, hit a 3-pointer. He's back, baby. Dedmon from long range is back. Also chipped in 9 rebounds in 15 minutes. That's just unbelievable. Had an assist too. Was active. Great hands. Big body out there. Challenging shots. Doing everything that you would expect from a center with legitimate size. Fantastic game from him. I can't say enough about Dedmon's impact. You know, I have to say I'm slowly becoming a convert and believing in what Dedmon brings to the table here. And I also have to shout out Max Strus. I think he had a pretty solid game overall, although Markieff Morris eclipsed him in terms of total points. He wound up having 7 points. Omer Yurtseven had 8 points, mostly in garbage time towards the end of the game, but still a good accomplishment for his first actual 8 points in an NBA game. Max Strus had 2 of 4 shots for the field, 1 of 3 from three-point range for the total 5 points. But he had one of the most badass blocks that we have seen in a long time. This was Jimmy Butler, Andre Iguodala, LeBron James type chase down. I know I sound like I'm overstating things to a huge degree. If you did not see that Strus block, this is why they are a believer in what Strus can bring to the table. He has, I know everybody wants to look at it and say, deceptive athleticism, kind of like what Pat Connaughton is known for. Connaughton's just a fantastic athlete. He was a high school quarterback, a baseball player, and of course, a basketball player at Notre Dame. He could have played professionally at the base in baseball, chose basketball instead. Strus, similarly, a pretty good athlete himself. I think that gets slept on a lot because he's white, because you're just not expecting that in today's NBA. Totally understandable. And at the same time, we have to get past it. Strus is a hell of an athlete, and he's certainly capable. I mean, just that chase down block was fantastic, igniting a fast break on the other opportunity. On the other end, with Bam Adebayo as the beneficiary. what a series of plays that was, from the Strus block to the Bam Euro step on the other end. Ridiculous. That was so much fun to see that game, to see to hear the FTX Arena crowd, which I'll not get used to. Everybody so excited. Everybody just caught up in the moment. I think there was only one dull stretch there after Lowry got hurt, and everybody was kind of wondering whether or not what we had seen in the first quarter was going to go down the toilet. And I will say this, you know, Milwaukee was able to come back partly because of Lowry's injury, but also because it really knocked the wind out of everyone's sails. You know, everything was rolling. Everything was clicking so well. And yes, Giannis and the Bucks hit some big shots in general. George Hill had some big shots too. But man, I got to tell you, the Heat just were kind of reeling there for a little bit. At one point, Lowry wound up going into the locker room, and then he came back later on. And then everybody seemed to be engaged and ready again. But for now, though, it just kind of seemed to knock everybody, knock the wind out of everybody for a little bit there. But great response from the team, great overall effort from the bench and the starting group. What can I say? Just a really, really good game. And, just a reminder, as always, now that I've got your attention, that thank you so much for always making our show your first listen of every day. You're listening to Locked On Heat. And if you're looking for a treat to indulge in, then let me tell you, you should be trying Built Bar. 9 delicious flavors, all of them soft and easy to chew, covered in 100% chocolate. You can't go wrong with any of these incredible flavors, from coconut to raspberry to salted caramel or cookies and cream. They're all great. You can get a mixed box where you get 2 of each of those 9 flavors. They're fit for all kinds of diets. They've got all the nutrients you're looking for. And if you go to built.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED15, you get 15% off your order. So use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Reminder, you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag LOHeat. Be sure to please follow the show and leave a review. So many of you did reach out during the course of the game. I'm sorry that I didn't get a chance to talk to some of you actually at the FTX Arena, but just a really, really great environment. I'm sure everybody really enjoyed the experience. It was a great night for Miami fans in general. The Panthers won too, so if you like the NHL, it's also a good night in that regard. But I had a couple of big other points that I wanted to make, because I think a lot of people were looking at the response from Miami, and they're thinking of themselves, if you know, were they looking to exact revenge? And while I will say comments from PJ Tucker and maybe a couple others kind of hinting at, yes, this was an important game, I don't think it was the primary focus. It's a regular season. Yes, you try to get up for some games here and there, but you don't want to, you don't want to use up that sort of emotional energy on game one of 82. It's a long season. You've got to kind of pick your battles a little bit. At the same time, especially with half the roster, half Milwaukee's roster injured, I don't know how much of a revenge game it actually was. It was a great statement game, however. I will say that. While it might not have been the revenge game that everybody was hoping for, like you want, like save that for the playoffs. How about that? It doesn't matter. You beat them on game one in October. No one gives a crap. Everybody forgets about that. Everybody always talks about this. Oh, during the regular season, whenever these two teams match up, Team X wound up leading the season series 4-0. That doesn't matter. The big three, I remember them routinely losing a couple series here and there when they would match up against the Pacers. Okay, you can keep that game in November. It doesn't really matter come May. And that's when those games really count. So as much as we all want to view this as a revenge game, and I totally understand that mentality, it really wasn't. And moreover, this means nothing. I don't think Budenholzer was playing coy. Also, I must say, a lot of people kind of thought, oh, he didn't want to show his cards. Drew had an actual injury. Brooke had some backside tightness. I don't think you want to start putting too much pressure on them early on in the season. You don't want to risk further injury down the road. They see themselves as a contender still. They're looking to repeat. That's the obstacle Miami has in front of them, not to mention, of course, the talented Brooklyn Nets as well. Now, this question comes in from TZA Mac via Twitter. We know it's just game one and the Bucks are not complete in this game, but man, do the Heat really look this good? If Bam and Tyler continue to be this aggressive and accurate, where would you rank the Heat come playoff time? Well, look, to answer the first part of your question, do the Heat really look this good? Yeah, I think that's pretty evident, TZA. I mean, they just look fantastic on defense, engaged, really focused on creating deflections and forcing turnovers, making sure that they stop the point of attack, something that they have not been able to do effectively for a long time because of Goran Dragic and some obvious weaknesses on the defensive end. Just the huge disparity between a guy like Dragic, who anybody who's listened to the show for a prolonged period knows that I really enjoy talking with him and having him and watching him on the team. But that's not to say that he's in the same echelon as Lowry, especially when it comes to defense. And that impact that he has is fantastic. Now, to your second question, if Bam and Tyler continue to be this aggressive and accurate, where do you rank the Heat? Look, talent is talent, you know, whatever and however you define that word and that grouping, I still think you would look at Brooklyn's trio of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant and say that they're probably the superior team. Now, that doesn't mean anything, because we don't have no idea what's going on with Kyrie Irving. We don't know if James Harden gets hurt. We don't know if KD gets hurt. Injuries are always a concern. If you assume that Brooklyn stays healthy, which is a huge assumption, given that everything that's happened to them and everything that's happened to those three players over the last couple of seasons, they've all missed a significant amount of time. I don't know that you can count any team as being a vast superior to Miami. I think Miami's right up there with them. If this is what we're going to see from Bam, Tyler, Kyle, Jimmy, Duncan, et cetera, throughout the rest of the season, I think this team looks really good. They're great defensively. They force turnovers. They can switch. They can play drop. They can do things with some versatility, some switchability. You're not, you know, kind of positionless basketball to some extent. I mean, we saw moments there where Jimmy, Bam, Kyle, PJ, I think everybody, including Duncan, wound up switching onto Giannis Antetokounmpo. That kind of switchability, positionless basketball, whatever you want to call it, just a huge asset for a coach like Eric Spoelstra to have. You can do so much more. But given all that, yes, I think that they are certainly worthy of consideration as one of the top teams in the East. I've said this pretty consistently. I'm not necessarily a believer in what Atlanta can do. I don't think I'm necessarily a believer in what New York can do despite their success last year. The fact that they've got Kemba Walker, I think they're going to have a bit of a letdown this year. I don't think that Julius Randle is going to be able to continue to put up those monster numbers that he did last season. I think Miami, if they're, this is the version that we get, you know, again, given that they were facing a inferior Bucks team because they were missing some injuries, I still think that this team is very good. This Heat team is still very, very good. And the fact that they were able to shut down Giannis and Middleton as effectively as they were, two superstars, mind you, I think regardless of the fact that you're missing Lopez and Holiday, you know, I think they still had enough. If somehow Giannis had been able to go on a run or Middleton had been able to go on a run, Miami wouldn't let that happen. So that's a fantastic response from this group. However, the big concern, as always, not just with Miami, but with Milwaukee or with any team or Brooklyn, certainly, the injury issue. When Kyle wound up getting hurt in that second quarter, it looked a little sketchy. It looked a little, you know, there was some concern from Heat Nation there because he does so much for this team. He makes everything so much easier that to face injury or a kind of prolonged stretch without Lowry would not be very good for Miami. And you don't want to have any kind of injury issues for any player on this team, not necessarily even on any other team, but at the Miami, you don't want to be in that position where you have to capitalize on another team. You'd rather face them at full strength. I think every athlete would tell you the same thing, but that's not to say that they won't, if they wind up facing a Bucks team that's depleted or a Brooklyn team that's missing one or two of their big three. No one's going to shed a tear for them. No one shed a tear for Miami when they lost two of their starters before they faced the Lakers in the NBA Finals a couple of years. Last point I'll make before I wrap up today's episode, the chance for Udonis Haslem. If you watch the broadcast, you know, obviously Miami had a pretty sizable lead late in the fourth quarter, and so fans were yelling for Udonis. I have to say, I found it a little awkward because I don't think UD wanted to go into the game. And moreover, I don't want him to do this. That kind of feels reminiscent of like early in the Heat season. Early in franchise history, there was a player here by the name of Alan Ogg that was kind of, you know, a big 7-footer, kind of slow, a player from another era that you don't find in today's NBA. You don't find any slow plodding centers in today's NBA unless they could, you know, shoot somehow from 30 feet away or something like that. That's just, you have to be much more fleet of foot. Alan Ogg was not that. And he just wound up getting that reputation because he was the 15th man on a particularly bad Heat team. And so when games were either out of hand because you were winning or because they were losing, fans would start to yell Alan Ogg. We've seen this before. Very many teams, you always wind up getting a Brian Scalabrine type guy or somebody along those lines. UT isn't that. That's not who UT is. Like, he is a 3-time champion. He is a fantastic player, leading, you know, rebounder. He's not a human victory cigar. And I don't think he's at that point where, look, I just want 30 seconds of action. I don't want 30 seconds of minutes and play out there just because, you know, Spo tosses me the figurative bone here. I don't like it. UD deserves more. That's my two cents. I understand a lot of people just want to see Udonis out them. I get that completely. You want to see Haslem out there while you still can, especially if you just go to a few games over the course of a year. You know, you want to see Haslem play whenever you're out there. But the chanting, it's a little embarrassing, puts him in an awkward situation because he doesn't want to go out there and be humiliated that way. You know, maybe those are the kind of subtleties that we never look at as fans, especially on a night like tonight when everybody's kind of buzzed from the high of feeling so good about this team and watching this team play at such a high level. But for Haslem to be trotted out there like that just felt a little disrespectful. He didn't play. You saw Spoelstra's face as he was looking over at UD, kind of saying, you want to play? And UD kind of shaking his head, I think. And then Spoelstra saying, well, you know, you're not going out there. Because I think Spo understands that trotting him out there is not the way you want to remember UD. Like, honestly, last season's minute performance where he punched Dwight Howard, that's as good as it gets. That felt right because it was at a different time. It was early in the game. It was a big matchup against Philadelphia. Not that it ultimately mattered, but you wanted to kind of exact a little revenge on them. You wanted to kind of show them up as well. And I think that was a fantastic game, especially after Howard started letting loose with a couple of, you know, elbows and started being the disruptive presence that he's become late in life. Oh, speaking of Dwight Howard, glad he didn't make the top 75 players list. I know a lot of you were complaining about it. I saw a lot of people on Twitter in general saying, oh, how could he get overlooked? Well, you know, it's probably because he can't shoot from 8 feet out, but or never has been and never will be. Still, as far as the top 75 players list that was released over the last 3 days by the NBA, a number of Heat players affiliated with the team to some degree. Bob McAdoo, the former assistant coach and current Heat scout, was finally named as one of the top players in NBA history, a egregious error that was made the last time a couple of years ago when they did the 50th best players in NBA history. He was left off that list. That was an insult. Dwayne Wade being added to the top 75 list. They kept all 50 players from the former list and basically just added 25 new ones. Dwayne was one of them. Shaq had already been a member of that list. They also added Ray Allen. He is one of the top 75 players in NBA history. So fantastic. An honor for him. They also added Gary Payton, the former Heat point guard. You know, obviously he had some fantastic years in Seattle, Milwaukee, and he also played for Miami. Was a great member of that 2006 NBA championship team. Shaquille O'Neal was, like I said before, also a member of that top 50 list, and now of course a member of the top 75 list. So a great overall showing. And LeBron James, I think there was no doubt whether or not he was going to be one of the top 75 players on this list. He certainly got that honor as well. So a good night for Heat Nation in general, a big win, a big showing for them as a franchise with some great history and some fantastic players. And again, just a reminder, you can always reach me via email, always send something using the hashtag AskGullyHeat. Just a great, great overall night. A special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting today's episode. Thanks to all of you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. This is David Ramil signing off for now.